Welcome back to Gold Ribbon Conversations, the podcast created to support families fighting childhood cancer in Ireland. 6 children, adolescents and young adults are diagnosed with cancer every week in Ireland. And the Gold Ribbon, which illuminates precious light, love, courage and compassion, is a symbol of strength and solidarity for each and every one. My name is Sinead O'Moore, and it is my privilege to bring you this podcast on behalf of Childhood Cancer Ireland, a charity founded by and led by parents of children with cancer and survivors who know that one of the greatest sources of strength for this fight is conversation. Throughout this podcast, I talk to families impacted by childhood cancer, as well as the experts who care for our children's health, education and happiness. Yes, we talk about the fear and the pain, but we also talk about the hope and the friendship and the community that exists here, because you are not alone. Childhood Cancer Ireland values every single donation while on its mission to help more children, adolescents and young adults survive cancer and thrive as adults, and support all those dealing with the long-term effects of illness and trauma. In this episode, I'm joined by Avril Deegan, a survivor of childhood cancer and now a third-year PhD student researching childhood leukemia survivorship from a psychological perspective. She is working with Professor Owen Smith, who was her oncologist as a child, and Chiara Bassani, principal clinical psychologist in Crumlin, to look at resilience, quality of life and social support at the end of treatment. Avril doesn't remember much about her treatment, but is committed to developing the area of knowledge and support to help others. She has gone on to live a healthy and ambitious life with her education and sport, with a sports scholarship in DCU and representing Ireland at cross country. Avril, thank you so much for joining me on Gold Ribbon Conversations. This, I hope, is going to be a conversation with enormous hope and real credit to you, actually, because you've turned an experience of childhood cancer into, well, a future career and a current mission of yours to understand it more and to understand it from a psychological perspective as you study your PhD. Looking at childhood leukemia survivorship. Tell me, what does it mean for you to devote your time now to understanding it more from a psychological perspective?
So first of all, thanks a million, Sinead, and Childhood Cancer Ireland for inviting me to be on this podcast. It's a real privilege to share my experience as well as the research I'm conducting. I'm now in my third year of my PhD in Dublin City University. And I suppose the interest of why I did this PhD at the start was that I had leukemia when I was younger. So, you know, that cancer experience has been with me, and I always, no matter what happens, you're always going to have that experience and, you know, the realization that you had cancer when you were younger. So it is always something that I wanted to go back into because I had that interest there to know. Because I was only 5 when I got it, so I didn't really know the ins and outs of it because it's so young, obviously. So that interest has been always there to go back into it, I guess, and learn more about it. And obviously then to help families that are going through it, because whether we like it or not, cancer is always going to be with us. So if I can help in any way or shape or form through my research to, you know, improve like outcomes for families and kind of treatment plans and policies that are in place at the minute, that'd be great. Even if it was the tiniest little bit of help I could do, that's kind of the aim of this research. I suppose I did my undergraduate degree in psychology, so psychology is kind of where my interest lies in, and I think it plays a big part in everyone's life. You know, your mental health is so important, and I think especially then within, if you're looking at cancer, it's bound to have an impact on your mental health, the whole cancer journey for the patient, the parents, the whole family. No matter who you are, it doesn't matter who you are, cancer could affect anyone, from no matter what background you come from. So I think that kind of psychological side of things was an interest to me, and how I could use that then to go into the cancer research area. So that's kind of where the interest started. And then I was very lucky that my supervisor that I had for my undergraduate degree, Dr. Simon Dunn, was a massive support at the time, and he was able to kind of guide me on how best we could use my psychological background to do some research within the area of childhood leukemia survivorship. So yeah, I kind of started from there, and then just grew and grew, and eventually I did sign up to do the PhD. And yeah, I'm undergoing the research now at the minute.
I know when we were, before we hit record, you remarked about how you don't really remember that much about your own cancer journey when you were five. But were, as you were growing older and becoming more aware of yourself and becoming the version of you that you are now, was there any psychological or mental health, I'm not even going to say challenges, but just realizations about what it is that you had survived?
Yeah, I guess as you get older, you kind of looking through pictures and videos was kind of a big thing. Because obviously when you're cancer, you know, bald hair, you have no hair, you look visibly sick. I have vague memories. I don't have absolutely no memories. It'd be wrong in saying that. Obviously when you're looking at kind of school photos with your class and stuff, I was the girl in the photo with the hat and no hair. So I obviously stood out from the rest of them. And then I do have memories. I'm actually working in Crumlin at the minute. And when I went back into the hospital, I was walking down the corridors, there's this wall, just the whole corridor is just filled with jerseys along the walls. And I got a memory straight away from that, because I always used to look out for the Leash jersey, because that's where I'm from. So that was the exact same as coming back to there. And then only the other day, I took a wrong turn when I was in the hospital, and there's this big fish tank that's in that. It's very funny even just to say it, like, but there's this fish tank in Crumlin Hospital, and I remember that straight away, from when I was younger and in the hospital, like I'd look for the fish and fish tank. So you do get these memories coming back. And then even the consultants that are in the hospital at the minute, a lot of them, and the nurses and secretaries and receptionists, a lot of them are still there from when I was there. Because I know it sounds kind of long time ago, it was nearly 20 years ago since I was there, but there hasn't been that many changes within the hospital either. So a lot of them remember me as well. So that's nice to see that they can remember me and I can remember them too. But in terms of the treatment side of things, I don't have very much memories of going for treatment or going for chemo. I don't know, I think your brain probably blocks that side of things out, the bad kind of things. Whereas the more positive side of things, the fun parts of it, like getting to go for dinner after you go to the hospital, because I didn't like going to the hospital. That was a big motivation to actually go to the hospital, see the doctors and the nurses. And yeah, simple things like that. And I suppose it's kind of the organisations then as well, like Bardstown and Bobo Gum Club. I'd have big memories from there, because they were kind of happy moments along the journey. Because they were like, I'd go with my cousins to Bardstown down for the weekend, or to Bobo Gum Club. And we always had the best time there. So yeah, it's that kind of fun side of the happier memories that you remember, I think. And now when I'm in the research side of things, I'm going back into looking at just learning about the disease itself and kind of the biology behind it and how the treatment works and stuff. So it's only now that I'm realizing what kind of treatment I went through at the time. And yeah, it's interesting to go back into it from that kind of side of things.
When do you think in your age range did you start to understand, oh, it was cancer, and with a feeling of, and I know what that word means now?
Yeah, I'd say it was fairly late for me, to be honest. I'm kind of the person that just gets on with things. Probably would have been only when I started in college, to be honest, because secondary school was fine. Didn't really consider it too much. And then it wasn't until I kind of went into college that I kind of got more and more. And then you obviously have cancer. I wasn't the only one within my family to have cancer. So, yeah, I had an auntie that unfortunately didn't make it through the cancer journey. Unfortunately, she passed away from it. So that was obviously, you know, devastating for the whole family. And, you know, you wonder why some people are able to get through it and others don't make it the whole way through. So that kind of, you know, just kind of to even just to do a bit of research within the area, just for my Auntie Aggie as well, just to say that I could help a small bit in some way. I know my cancer's looking at children's cancer, so it's a bit different than adult cancer. But at the same time, it's cancer at the end of the day. There's not always going to be that happy outcome. So I guess that's kind of where, you know, the interest in cancer research started from that point on. Yeah.
The work you're doing now, the research you're doing now, the learning that you're getting now, what is it teaching you about what happens in terms of that psychological perspective?
Yeah, so it's massive. Like, cancer takes up so much of a person's life. You know, you're talking 3 or 4 years if it's successful treatment. And then if there's complications or relapses or anything, it can go on for a lot longer. So psychologically, it's tough on the whole family, not just the patient or the immediate family. You know, if it's a child you're talking about, you have the parents, siblings, so the grandparents, the aunties, the uncles, cousins, back into the schools, then the whole community. It affects everyone, like, and psychologically the same way. So I suppose for my own research, I'm focusing in on that end of, you know, successful end of treatment phase. So when you finish treatment and you're transitioning back to normal life, if you want to call it. And I'm looking at kind of the support that's there for families and how families feel about that support. So I'm going to be asking families to tell me, you know, about the support that you're receiving while you're at that end of treatment phase. Because from the research, we can see that, unfortunately, the support tends to diminish over time. Once you finish that treatment, you have much less regular visits within the hospital. You're not in that active system anymore. So you're kind of just left to go home and kind of deal with it yourself. I know there has been improvements since even when I was in hospital to today, but even still, there needs to be a lot more, I think, done within that period of time when you finish treatment to life after treatment, the next few years, and even, you know, 10, 15 plus years down the road, because you're talking long-term effects and different things like that could arise. So there needs to be that support there for families, I think, throughout the whole journey, not just when they're on active treatment. And then I'm also looking at the variable of resilience, because I think cancer families are really resilient. There's no other way of putting it. Like, they go through so much while they're on the treatment, and then after treatment as well. It's, you know, you look at them and you wonder how can they stay that resilient after all they're going through. So that's what I'm kind of going to look at as well, is because there is links between social support resilience there in the literature. So I'm going to investigate that more to see how we can, you know, use these psychological variables to improve cancer treatment plans. And then finally, the last kind of variable that I'm kind of mainly focusing in on is quality of life. Because, you know, you need to have a good quality of life and mental health for everyone, like parents, children, the whole lot. And again, in the literature, it's showing that there is a link between social support, resilience, and quality of life. So I think, unfortunately, there hasn't been much research done on psychological side of things. So I think a lot more needs to be done there so that we can improve kind of those treatment plans that are in place, and that psychological care is prioritized within those plans as well. Not just, obviously, the medical side of things is highly important, but you can't forget that psychological side of things too, I think.
And psychological side of, or psychological support for the family unit, because of course it is the child that's going through it. But as a child, you look to your parents and your siblings for those signs of safety and security, and how they behave in the environment of the home has a direct impact on how you feel in the environment of the home.
Do you think there's enough being done to support parents through the psychological damage of seeing their child go through cancer?
Yeah, I think there is, but there is a lot more that can be done. There's been massive improvements within that kind of psychosocial side of things of the cancer journey. I think that's largely due to the likes of Professor Owen Smith, Dr. Chiara Bassani. I'm collaborating with them on my research, and I can see that, you know, steps are being made. There is that kind of small group of kind of psycho-oncologists within Ireland, and they're very like enthusiastic and striving for better and to prioritize that psychosocial side of things for cancer patients and their families. And I know recently they launched the National Model of Care for psycho-oncology services for children, young adults and adolescents with cancer. And it's a big document, and it goes through, you know, what needs to be done and where the gaps are, where the gaps are at the minute. And I think it's great to see things like that being done, because I think within in the past it was kind of overlooked, and it was more, you know, treating the illness, getting them out of the hospital and curing them. But now there's a lot more emphasis on that psychosocial follow-up care, not just when they're on cancer treatment, but throughout, and when they finish treatment, then into normal life again.
We are seeing, like, time and time again, I'm hearing, I suppose, from the parent side of things, as you said, like that moment when they're not in active care is really when those psychological, I suppose, fights that they've been working through, they can become louder.
Like, it's a scary time. You finish, obviously it's amazing that you finish treatment, the child is cured, they don't have cancer anymore, like, that's amazing. But then there is also the reality that you now have to go back to work. Because obviously a lot of parents would end up taking time off work when the child's on active treatment. The child has to, a lot of the time, end up going back to school if they've taken time out of school. The siblings are going to be back, you know, in force as well. So there's a lot going on once the treatment ends, like, you're back to normal life, if you want to call it that, even though life was never going to be the same as it was before the child got cancer. So I think, yeah, I just think that that kind of period is really important, that we support families and parents especially as well. So for my own research, I think it's good the way I'm doing it, that I'm getting the perspective of both the parent and the child. Because I know sometimes the child's voice is overlooked, and research has generally just focused on the parent's point of view, or asking the parents what the child thinks of something. But that might not be the case of what the child actually thinks. So for my own research, I'm going to ask both the parent and the child individually to give me their experiences of that end of treatment phase.
So important, isn't it? Because they are living different things. Like, their experiences are so different, and yet so knitted together. But the feelings and the emotions, especially in that relationship dynamic where, you know, you're trying to protect each other, you may not be as honest with each other because they're the people that you love most.
Yeah, because even I've started recruitment now within Crumlin Hospital, and I can even see there's a lot of kind of, yeah, that teenage kind of age group that are doing my study, because I'm looking at under 18. So you're looking, you know, that 13, 14, 15 age group. I find them very interesting when I'm working with them, because they're really, when they hear that, they can give their voice. Because most any studies they have been asked to do has just been the parents that have been the ones that have been asked about their cancer. That they were very enthusiastic once they heard that they got to give an input. They were all very much on board, because they never got that opportunity to say how they felt about things and how their journey was.
So much has been taken away from them already, you know?
Yeah, so that's been the one big positive, I think, from my research. And I'm only very early days with recruitment, that I can see that there is that big, families are very enthusiastic about the research, especially that at that end of treatment phase, because they know they're coming towards their end of the days within the hospital system, So they like to see that there is going to be that support for them when they finish.
The transition to survivorship is such a positive time for families, but it's also a time of great uncertainty and fear. Avril's research explores the experiences of children and parents as they transition to life after cancer. Avril is looking to speak to parents and young people themselves who have successfully finished treatment for any type of leukemia within the past 5 years. So, if you are a survivor over the age of 18, or the parent of a survivor who is under 18, and you'd like to take part in a short questionnaire, contact us at info@childhoodcancer.ie for more information. To help us to continue our services, please text GOLD to 50300 and donate €4, or visit childhoodcancer.ie for more.
It's also like at a point in your life where you're so ready to be independent and to start making your own decisions and having that friend group and feeling like you're learning who you are. And now all of a sudden cancer can somehow like infiltrate your identity.
Yeah, I was actually only recently speaking with Professor Owen Smith about this. And I was just saying, I can't imagine having cancer as a teenager or young adult. However bad it is when you're a young child, you know, when you're a young child, you kind of just get on with things. You know, it's the norm. You don't really notice that there's a difference between you and the child next to you. Because even I was speaking with my friends from when I was in primary school, and I know one of them mentioned they don't even remember when I had cancer, or when all they could remember was having the red cap from pictures and having no hair. But it didn't really make a difference to me or to them, because they were still playing with me or whatever. You know, kids just get on with it, really. Whereas if you're a young adult or a teenager, it must be, I don't know how they can do it. It's just remarkable resilience that they show, I think. If you're in that, you know, secondary school environment, next thing you're told you have cancer, you lose your hair, you're sick, you're out of school, you're in and out the whole time. Then if you're into sports and stuff, imagine you're like big into it, told you can't play sports anymore until your treatment is finished. You're taken out of it. That's kind of part of your identity. I kind of feel strongly about that as well, because I'm big into athletics. So I can't imagine being told, oh, you can't run anymore because you have cancer now. You can't run now for the next 3 or 4 years until treatment is finished. You know, because that's part of your identity as a teenager or a young person. So you feel like you're stripped of that. And then you obviously have to go through the horrible cancer journey. I think I just can't imagine how they do it.
Resilience is a conflicting word. I have had some parents on the podcast who use it in a very positive way and are very, you know, celebratory of the fact that their child had resilience. And there are some that have challenged the word and have been quite angry about how, you know, a child shouldn't have to be resilient. It shouldn't have to be a characteristic that they discover about themselves. And that resilience isn't like something that people have through good things worked towards and achieved. Resilience is something that has been put upon them because you have no choice. Has there been, I know that resilience has formed a large part of what you said were those three phases of your studies. Tell me about what you've discovered about what resilience really is and what it means in the realm of childhood cancer.
Yeah, so it is that, you know, that one term that we were stuck on for a long period of when we're just coming up with the idea of the study. Because as you were saying, there can be positive and negative connotations towards that term resilience. Because obviously no child should have cancer, or young adults or adolescents or adults, anyone at all. You know, no one should be put through cancer, because it's obviously, it's not good. But then when you talk about resilience, I suppose it's probably put upon you when you're in that cancer journey that you kind of just have to be resilient. Sometimes you don't even know you are being resilient until it's over. And you look back on the cancer journey and realize how resilient the whole family was to get through it. Because you make so many sacrifices when a child's going through cancer. You know, you have to prioritize even more so the child's health and care. Make a lot of sacrifices. And yeah, just it takes up so much of your time. And then just resilience is, you know, you're trying to cope with this disease as best you can. Obviously there's going to be ups and downs. It's going to be good days, bad days. But it's just trying to keep one foot going the whole time and keep going forward. And yeah, I just think it's a vital piece that needs to be looked at. And how that, just how parents and children view it. So I'm very interested to see how my research, how families view that term resilience, because it is a central part of my research and it's often overlooked within the research that has been conducted. I haven't seen any studies, to my knowledge anyways, that have been conducted with childhood leukemia survivors and looking at the term resilience. And even in other cancers as well, it's barely looked at, very rarely. So I think it'll be interesting to see, you know, what are the parents' experiences of it and what did they think of the term? So I think that'll be interesting to see how the findings come out on that.
It can sometimes be kind of like, oh, and now I also have to be resilient.
Yeah.
Whereas can we have compassion for, no, I'm really struggling, actually.
Yeah. So I'm hoping that my research will bring out both sides of it, the positive and the negative sides, because it's obviously not, you're gone through and you've successfully completed treatment, but there has been those, you know, moments that have been very tough. So I'm hoping parents will be able to share those experiences and the children themselves, those experiences of when times were tough. So my research is kind of two phases. There's going to be questionnaire based, so we can get that kind of hard quantitative data, you know, your numerical data. And then there's going to be that follow-up interviews with families, like the parents and the children. And I'm hoping those interviews can bring out those side of things a bit more and kind of enhance my findings. And then we can link both the quantitative and the qualitative data together to come up with a picture of, you know, how families feel about it, really. Because there has been no research within Ireland, really, that has been conducted looking at that kind of end of treatment phase. And those variables that I'm looking at. So I think that'll be really beneficial for just even to bring back to consultants and researchers within that area, so they can help inform future care and policies.
What have you learned about survivorship in terms of your own personal experience, but also from the research that you're doing? Obviously, it's something that is the absolute goal throughout all of this. But we also, I'm sure, I need to understand that there's some confusing emotions that I'm sure comes to the surface as a survivor.
Yeah. So even before I did this research, I'd never go around and be saying, oh, I'm a cancer survivor. It wouldn't be the first thing I'd be telling people, you know. Just never felt the need to probably say it. But now as I get more into it, I realize that a lot of families go through it, you know. And it's very important to bear in mind that there is those patients that unfortunately don't make it the whole way through it. And I think throughout my research, I need to be very conscious of that, because it has touched me personally as well. So yeah, I'm very conscious of that families don't always make it the whole way through the cancer journey.
So has your research taught you anything on the range of emotions within survivorship?
Yeah, so obviously you go through so many different emotions. There's the positive ones, you know, happiness, joy, you've completed this journey. You're back to, you know, being you. Then there's also the kind of more negative side of things, that, oh, I could have been one of the unlucky ones. Why wasn't I one of the unlucky ones? Why? What makes me different than someone who hasn't gone the whole way through it successfully? So there is those conflicting emotions that probably you could go back and forth in your mind constantly if you wanted. I think that's even more true for if you got diagnosed when you're kind of older childhood, teenage years, more so than when you were, you know, 5 years old. It's kind of a lot for me anyways. It was kind of back in the past. I didn't really go back to it too much. So yeah, there is those kind of conflicting emotions that you could go back and forth. So even saying that, you know, it just shows how important that psychosocial care and treatment is throughout the cancer journey, not just while you're on active treatment.
Because while in fight or flight, you know, maybe we're not processing everything that's happening, and that it is only when we arrive at survivorship that maybe there can be that space to acknowledge actually the range of emotions that have, you know, lived in our psychological selves, not just our physical selves throughout treatment.
Yeah. So obviously when you're on treatment, it's constant go, go, go. You're up and down to the hospital, in and out to the doctors, you know, chemotherapy, different treatments are going on. So you don't actually get a time to just sit down and reflect. And it isn't until you get towards the end of the treatment phase that you're realizing, oh, this is actually coming to an end now. You're trying to remember what was life like before the cancer journey started, because you know that's going to be back to reality, back to the norm again. Even when you're back home, then you have that massive support behind you from your community and your family, friends. While you're on active treatment, you're wondering, will that stay the same once you finish? And unfortunately, it shows that that social support does tend to diminish over time. And you can kind of see why, because, you know, you're sick at the time and then you're cured. But I think those initial few months, especially when you finish treatment, are vital that we keep that support level up. Because, you know, there's a lot of fear. Will the cancer come back? Is it fully, you know, cleared? And you're thinking then, is there going to be any relapse and stuff like that? So I think it does need to be, you know, really strong support in those initial few months once you finish treatment.
And what does support look like? What does that mean at a day-to-day level?
Yeah, so support, trying to find a definition of social support was also very difficult for my research, because everyone has different opinions on what social support is, and it can come from various people. It can be emotional support, you know, care and love and empathy from people. It can be informational support, so giving information to people, advice and things like that. Then you can have like instrumental support. So, you know, that's kind of like your physical, tangible support. So there's lots of different types of support, and it can come from a variety of people as well. You know, your members of your family, the doctors, nurses, your community, organizations such as the Bardstown Breakthrough Cancer, all these kind of organizations as well can support families throughout that cancer journey. I think social support has so many different dimensions to it. That will also be interesting with my research to see what kind of support families value.
And individuals, I suppose. I mean, something that works for you might not work for somebody else, and vice versa. So it's like also tuning into yourself, knowing yourself and knowing what it is that you need and being able to find it.
Yeah, because no two people's cancer journey or experience is going to be the same. Everyone's is completely different to the next. And that can be for a variety of different reasons. So I think it's important to remember that as well, that, you know, everyone's journey is going to be completely different to the next person.
It's such an amazing depth of work that you're really doing. What would you love everybody to realize or to know or to understand about the psychological perspective of childhood leukemia survivorship?
I think just promoting and just emphasizing the importance of psychosocial care for families, both during treatment and then following months after treatment, and then, you know, a couple of years down the road, that needs to be prioritized. There needs to be, I know I don't want to be talking too much about money sides of things, but, you know, there needs to be funding and different things put into that kind of psychological and psychosocial side of care for cancer treatment, because it's often overlooked, unfortunately, despite it playing a massive part in all parts of the journey of the cancer. So I think if my research can help that little bit more about, you know, showing that it is of value to families that their voices are heard from that psychological side of things, I'd be very happy with that. So yeah, I think just to keep pushing forward with the all sides of care for cancer, because there's more to it than just curing the actual disease.
You're doing such an amazing work. I always think that everyone's journey has led them to where they are right now. Everything that has happened in our lives some way shapes who we become. And it is no surprise, I suppose, as to why you feel so motivated and dedicated to really understanding this and being a voice for that social support that needs to happen. I think your research in involving patient voices and parent voices, involving, you know, those higher above you and educating them as you go and what you're learning, it's all so valuable.
Yeah, I think just even in general in life, even if you don't have cancer at all, you know, you need support with anything you do. It doesn't matter if it's within the cancer or any illness at all. Like, I wouldn't be doing this research if it wasn't for the support of my supervisors. I have a brilliant supervisory team behind me, with Dr. Simon Dunn, Professor Pamela Gallagher, Professor Veronica Lambert as well. And then I also have the support within the hospital side of things from Professor Owen Smith and Dr. Chiara Bassani. So this research definitely I wouldn't have been able to do this on my own. So you need that support behind you. And then I am also funded by the Irish Research Council and Breakthrough Cancer Research. So I have that financial side of support there as well. So that wouldn't be possible. This research wouldn't be possible without all those people's support. So I think it doesn't matter what area of life or research you're doing, you need support behind you.
And thank God that you have that support. We're so grateful to everybody that you just listed, because that's what we need. We need everybody collectively coming together on this journey of childhood cancer and the fight against it, to cross over and have every learn develop something else and have it all this integrated system of shared learning. And you're a huge part of that.
Yeah, I think like things like the Childhood Cancer Ireland's podcast that they do, other organisations like Canteen, Breakthrough Cancer Research, there's loads, the list could go on and on. But I think what they're doing to raise awareness of childhood cancer and other cancers in general is fantastic, because, you know, we need to be raising awareness for the general public as well, because it's all well and good when you're within that area of research, or, you know, if you're a consultant or whatever, you know, you're in the thick of it, so you know all about it, you know what's being done, what the gaps are. But for the general person who's not in that area, they don't actually know what's being done, what the gaps are. So I think all these organisations raising awareness through their social media and different things like that is fantastic, and it seems to be getting better and better. Even recently, I was at the Child and Adolescents Cancer Conference in Grove Park, and all these organisations were brought together, and you had survivors, you had consultants, doctors, the whole community there together, which is quite different to other conferences I've been to where it's just the researchers and the consultants that are at them. But I think bringing in those survivors and patients and the families into these conferences as well, and just generating conversations together with the consultants, I thought it was really nice to see the consultants and researchers were actually taking on board what these survivors were saying. I think that's brilliant, and a lot more of that needs to be done going forward.
Thank you for doing the work that you're doing and dedicating this portion of your life towards learning as much as you can and educating us all as you are. And I'm so interested to see where this takes you next once you've qualified, and how you're going to deliver it and use everything that you've learned in order to help a whole generation of people that are going to be going through this. It is remarkable work. I wish you every single piece of success. And thank you so much for talking about it and sharing it with us today.
Thanks a million, Sinead. And yeah, I think there's so much opportunity for even when I finish this research. I know I'm supposed to finish in the end of 2025, but there's so much more that could be done out of my research that I even have ideas going around in my head of how I could develop this further, you know, through different pieces of research within. I think that was kind of one of the big difficulties we had as well during the process of coming up with what my study was going to be, was trying not to make it too broad and just trying to narrow it down and do it to something that was actually manageable within a 4-year period, because there's so many aspects you could look at. Even things like when the child goes back to school was a big part I was looking at as well, that I thought, you know, it's a big part for the teacher as well. How are they going to, you know, deal with a child that has cancer, the other pupils within the school and stuff. So there's loads of different like avenues that I could go down once I'm finished my research. So it is very exciting to see where it's going to take me.
Keep going. Keep doing it. Keep staying as passionate as you are, because we need it. And thank you.
Thanks so much, Nate.
Thank you for listening to this Gold Ribbon Conversation. There are more Gold Ribbon stories written by those fighting childhood cancer on our website, childhoodcancer.ie, and you'll find a link in our show notes. If you can, we would love you to share this podcast across social media using hashtag Gold Ribbon Conversations, as it can help more families to discover this show. This podcast was produced by The Brand Story for Childhood Cancer Ireland, hosted by Sinead O'Moore, and sound production by Alan Breslin.